Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. In this series of lectures, Swami Nikhilanand explains the most important topics of the Gita chapter by chapter.
Pādāśritānāṁ tu samasta chauram Shri Radhikāya hridayasya chauram Jashyamal Kanti Chauram Chauragraganyam Purusham Namami Aho Chitramaho Chitram Vande Tat Prema Bandhanam Yad Baddham Muktidam Muktam Brahma Krida Bhrigi Kritam Yo Brahmanam Vidadhati Purvam Yo Vaivedanscha Prahinoti Tasmai Tadvamha Devamatma Buddhi Prakasham Mumukshuvai Sharanamaham Prapadye. The Divine Souls. Yesterday we covered the end of the second chapter as well as all of the main points of the third chapter. We're going day by day covering the most important points of each chapter. I left you with a question yesterday that Sri Krishna said, we need to attach our mind to God, but God is beyond our mind because our mind is mayic. It's made of material energy. And God is not. He is divine. So He is beyond all material energy. So He is beyond our mind. So how can we attach our mind to something that is beyond the reach of our mind? We'll get the answer to this question indirectly in this fourth chapter, which begins with Shri Krishna telling Arjun, Imam divasvate yogam proktavanaham abhyayam. Hey Arjun, this knowledge of the Gita is eternal. It is abhyayam. It exists eternally. It can never disappear or be destroyed. And I gave this same knowledge that I'm giving to you now to Vivaswan, sun god, celestial sun god. I gave it to him a long time ago. And he gave it to his son, Vaivaswat, and he gave it to his son, Ikshvaku, and it was passed on like that through generations of Rajarshi. But eventually this knowledge became lupt, you can say. It was unavailable for ordinary souls on the earth planet, so I'm revealing the same knowledge again to you now. So Arjuna asked, but Vivaswan is the father of Vaivaswat, who is the current Manu. So you must have told this knowledge to him millions of years ago, before the current civilization began on this earth planet. So how is it possible for you, I see you standing here now before me, we're both here, how is it that you are saying that you gave this same knowledge to Vivaswan so long ago? The beginning of our Manvantara is more than 120 million years ago. That's when Krishna is saying he gave this knowledge to the father of our current Manu. Manu means the one who started civilization on the earth planet. There's a different Manu for each Manvantara. A day of Brahma has 14 Manvantara. Just like our day has 12 hours, our night has 12 hours, Brahma's day has 14 hours. Each hour is called a Manvantara. And each Manvantara is 71 cycles of the four Yugas. The four Yugas being Satyug, Treta Yug, Dwapar Yug, and Kali Yug. And one cycle of those four Yugas is 4.32 million years. Just one cycle of those four Yugas. Because Kali Yuga is 432,000 years long. Dwapar Yuga is twice that, 864,000 years long. Treta Yuga is three times that, 1,296,000 years long. And Satyug is four times the duration of Kaliyug, 1,728,000 years. So you add them all up, you get 4,320,000 years. That's one Mahayug, one time around the four Yugas. Do that 71 times, and you get one Manvantara. And 14 of those Manvantara make one of Brahma's days. So Brahma's day is in fact 4,320,000,000 years long. But Krishna is saying, I'm not talking about the beginning of Brahma's day, I'm just talking about the beginning of this Manvantara. And we are in the 28th cycle of the four Yugas in this Manvantara. Remember, 71 cycles makes the whole Manvantara. We're through 28 cycles. So it's more than 120 million years ago. Krishna is saying, I gave this knowledge to Vivaswan, and he gave it to his son, Vaivaswat, who is the current Manvantara's Manu. So it means that Manu and his wife produced the first offspring on the earth planet, and we are all descendants of them. That is why we are called Manushya, because we are descended from Manu, and Manu is the son of Brahma, and Brahma is the son of Krishna. So in fact, we're all children of Shri Krishna. Amritasya vai putraha, Veda says, all souls are the children of Shri Krishna, and we don't just mean that figuratively, literally we are. Brahma gives life to Brahma. Shri Krishna gives life to Brahma. He appears out of the lotus that appeared out of the navel of Vishnu, who is Ansh of Shri Krishna. And Manu is produced by Brahma on the earth planet. And then we are all descendants of Manu. So we are literally descended from Shri Krishna, all the human beings of the earth planet. So, how did Shri Krishna give this knowledge to Manu, to Manu's father? All that time ago, more than 120 million years ago. So, Shri Krishna says, Bahuni mevyatitani janmani tavacharjuna tanyaham veda sarvani natvam vetha parantapa. Arjun, you have had many janma, and I have had many janma. Bahu actually means uncountable, unlimited. You've had unlimited janma, and I have had unlimited janma. But you don't remember mine or your own, and I remember both. I remember all of mine, and I remember all of the births of every single soul. This word janma is a confusing word because we take it to mean birth. Janmadin, we say that's your birthday. We celebrate Shri Krishna Janmashtami, the day of Shri Krishna's janma. So is his janma and our janma exactly the same? Well, first of all, understand the meaning of janma. Jani Pradurbhave, which means, Pradurbhave means prakat huna, to appear. So appearing and being born are two different things. Being born means out of your mother's womb, you are born. And appearing means you were invisible and then you became visible, or you weren't there and then you appeared there. That's prakat huna. So janma actually means to appear. Is there a difference between Shri Krishna's appearance and our appearance? Because we both take janma. Yes, he says, janma karma chame divyam. His janma is divya, divine. And our janma is prakrit, material. How? In many ways. There are many differences. But one of them is that we actually come from somewhere and we appear in our mother's womb. Shri Krishna doesn't need to come from anywhere in order to appear because he's already everywhere. There's nowhere he's not. So he did not appear in Devaki's womb because he was already there. He's in your belly, my belly, everybody's belly already. So you can say we're all impregnated with Shri Krishna. We just don't experience it. So Shri Krishna, using his yoga maya power, he manipulated that space or that air inside Devaki's belly to give her the feeling like she was pregnant, and she actually showed like she was pregnant also, and she could even feel like there's some little baby moving around inside. She had all of those experiences. But if you had taken an ultrasound, there would have been no embryo growing inside, no little baby Krishna growing inside of her. Because Shri Krishna does not take a material birth. He simulates a material birth by giving his mother the feeling of being pregnant. So then, what is his appearance? His appearance is, after 9 months, she feels that whatever that feeling was inside, now it's gone. And she opens her eyes and Krishna is standing in front of her. 6 foot tall, Shri Krishna. Not a little baby who was just born from her womb. Full grown Krishna just appeared in front of her. That's it. That is Krishna's appearance. In full decorations, wearing his crown and pitambara and everything. Then he becomes a little baby upon her request. Because she says, I wanted you as my child, you're already as big as my father. So please become a little baby so that I can enjoy having you as my child. Then he just transforms himself into a little baby and begins his childhood leelas. A leela means a divine action. Janma karma chame divyam. Krishna says his karma is also divya. So everything he does is divine. Because he has no material desires, he has no anger, greed, jealousy, attachment. So in effect, he has no reason to do anything. Name parthasti kartavyam trishulokeshu kinchana nanavaptam avaptavyam varta eva cha karmani. This is actually from the third chapter. Shri Krishna says, Arjun, I have no kartavya. I have nothing that I have to do, not in the whole three worlds. There is nothing worth attaining that is not already attained by me. So what reason would he have to perform any karma? The one who performs karma without having a reason to perform karma are only two: God and a God-realized saint. They have no personal reason because they already have perfect bliss. So why does he come? We'll get to that later. He actually discusses that in this chapter. But we should just know that everything he does, it's all divine, because he has no material desire and no material reason to do anything. So he just appears. How is that different from our appearance? Well, we actually have to come from somewhere. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani jathare shayanam, iha samsare khalu dustare, kripaya pare pahi murare, bhaj govindam, govindam. Bhajamurhamate. Adi Jagadguru Shankaracharya says that a soul does not choose to take janma as Sri Krishna does. He chooses to come when, how, where, all of that. It's his swaycha. But a soul is bound to take birth after birth due to his bondage of karma, due to the bondage of all the past actions that he has to get the results of. So he keeps being thrown, you can say, for just given birth. He enters the womb of whoever is going to be his mother in this life, and he's born, and then he dies, and then again he enters the womb of his next mother. So when our body dies, and we're going to be given birth, we're going to be sent to take birth from a specific mother, at that point, our soul doesn't travel to go over there. Our soul, also according to Gita, is sarva-gata. The soul can go anywhere in this universe instantly. It doesn't have to travel. It can just appear. So we just appear inside our mother's womb. We were there, and then we appear here. Then there was already a little embryo growing, so we come at a certain point in the growth of that little baby body inside our mother, and we claim that as our own. That is our body now for this life. Then after 9 months, we're born. But we had actually appeared well before our visible birth when we emerged from our mother's womb. So that is our appearance. Shri Krishna's appearance simulates this. It's just a simulation. He's not born in the same way we are. Ajopi sannabhyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swamadhishthaya sambhavamyatma mayaya. This one verse explains so much about Shri Krishna's appearance. Ajopi. Ajaha api. This means yadyapi main aj hoon. Aj means unborn. I never had janma. That's what Krishna is saying. Ja means janma. Although I am ajanma, I've never been born, yet I appear on the earth planet and I seem to take birth. God can do that. Ajopi sannabhyayatma, avyayatma. This one word holds so many secrets. Avyayatma means Krishna's atma. Well, Krishna doesn't have a soul-body duality like we do. We have a physical body and a divine soul inhabiting the physical body. Whereas Krishna is his body. His body is his soul. His soul is his body. Whereas we can't say, I am my body, Krishna is his body. So when we say Krishna is omnipresent, it means his body is omnipresent. Not just formless God is omnipresent. God in all of his forms, Krishna, Ram, Vishnu, Shiva, Durga, in every form he is omnipresent. It's amazing. God is simultaneously omnipresent in all of his forms. Avyayatma, Shri Krishna's own self is Avyaya. Avyaya means eternal, indestructible, indivisible, divine. In other words, his body can never die. His body is eternal. Some people think that Shri Krishna took that form 5,000 years ago when he appeared on this earth planet, and before that there was no Shri Krishna, not in that form. No, it's not right. Every single form of God exists eternally. We just say it's a way of talking that, oh, God took this form to come on earth, when in fact all of the forms are eternal. So Avyayatma, his form is eternal, omnipresent. And he could be taking uncountable avatar in uncountable Brahmand all over this universe simultaneously. He's only got one body. Just like when he did Maharas, there were uncountable gopis in Vrindavan waiting to do Maharas. Shri Krishna appeared with each and every gopi and did Maharas with each one. So he took uncountable forms just on this earth planet alone. Bhagwan Ram did the same thing when he returned to Ayodhya after his 14-year banvas. All the residents of Ayodhya came running and wished that Bhagwan Ram should greet me first. Chana mahamile sabahi bhagavana. So what did Ram do? He met everybody simultaneously. As many Ayodhyavasis as there were, he took that many forms. And each Ayodhyavasi only saw Ram coming to them. So they thought, Ram came to me. Out of everybody here, Ram came to me first. And the gopis all thought the same thing. They didn't see Krishna dancing with any other gopi. They only saw Krishna's out of all these gopis, Krishna's dancing with me. This is called his kaya vyuha deha. It's different than a yogi. A yogi using his yogic siddhi, which isn't even a divine power, he could create, using his mental power, some other bodies and inhabit, 40, 50 bodies at once and live in other places around the world. But that's different. The yogi's body is not omnipresent. He's using his mental power, his psychic ability to do that, and his power is limited. Whereas God's body, he doesn't have to produce it or reproduce it. It's already omnipresent, so he just makes it appear. His body is here, but it's invisible to us. Taking avatar doesn't mean that now he is somewhere where he wasn't before. Because if there was a saint in this room, that saint would say, Krishna's here, and Krishna's here, and he's here, and he's here, and I see him everywhere. And we don't see him. And if Krishna took avatar in this room, would the saint see anything different? No, he would still see Krishna everywhere, but now he would see that, oh, now the ordinary people, they can see Krishna at this spot where he's taking avatar. The saint can still see Krishna everywhere, and he sees him at that one place as well. And the ordinary souls only see Krishna at that one place where he's taking avatar, and they don't see him anywhere else. So that's why Shri Krishna says, Tribhir gunamayair bhavai rebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mamebhya paramavyayam. He says, because the ordinary souls have material eyesight, so even that avatar wale Shri Krishna, when we see him in his avatar form, we can't recognize him. He says we think that he's an ordinary being, just like us. Na abhijanati param avyayam, param supreme, avyayam his supreme, indivisible, eternal divine form is appearing at this one place in front of us, and we don't see it. Meaning, we see it, but we don't see it. We don't realize what we're looking at. We think he's an ordinary being, just like us. Yet the saint sees, oh, all of these souls can see Shri Krishna right here. It's the same Krishna who's everywhere, all over this universe. They're so lucky to see him. But the souls don't realize it, because they're not qualified. Chidanandamaya deha tumhara bigat bikar jana adhikari. Only the one who is adhikari, the one who is qualified, which means one who has divine vision, that one can recognize Shri Krishna's divinity. Otherwise, in fact, we don't even get any benefit, direct benefit, from seeing Shri Krishna. During his avatar kaal, like I gave you the example of Duryodhan, Shri Krishna went personally to Duryodhan and tried to reason with him and tried to even show him his almightiness. He revealed his almighty form to Duryodhan. Duryodhan couldn't accept it. He wasn't qualified. So, like it or not, we're in that same class. We're unqualified. Even if Shri Krishna came to us, it wouldn't benefit us. In fact, it might have the opposite effect. Because, let's say, there was a saint who said, that's Shri Krishna. We would say, then it means everything I read in the scriptures is wrong. The scriptures say that when someone sees Shri Krishna, they experience so much bliss that they faint. His beauty is unlimited. Great yogis and jnanis have sacrificed their bliss of formless God on the bliss of Shri Krishna. And I'm seeing that same Krishna, and I don't feel anything. He looks like an ordinary person to me. So I guess all the scriptures were wrong. It is us who's unqualified, yet we're putting the fault on God and the scriptures. So that's why, even though God has the power to appear anytime, anywhere, and we say, oh Krishna, if you could just appear to me once, then I would have faith in you. The scriptures say you exist. The saints say you exist. But I've never seen you, so can you show yourself to me once? Then I can believe in you, then I'll do devotion. But if he did that, whatever faith we have, even that would decrease, because we'd say, oh, that's it? So we have to become qualified first. We have to do devotion, purify our heart, receive Krishna's ultimate divine grace, which divinizes our whole mind and senses. Then we're qualified to see him, so at that time he comes to us. So he says, Bhutanam Ishvaropi San. This is still the same verse, the second quarter of it. I am still the ruler of the universe and the Lord of all living beings, even when I'm appearing at one place on this earth. Think about that. While he's telling Arjun this, he's sitting on the chariot in front of him. Everyone can take a second and make sure your cell phones are off. He's sitting in front of Arjun. Arjun sees the whole world around Shri Krishna, and he sees Krishna sitting at one place. Yet Krishna is saying, you see me at one place, but I am still the Lord of all living beings, which means He is residing in the heart of every single soul, giving life to that soul and keeping track of that soul's actions and giving the consequences. He's doing all of that now, and he was also doing it while he was sitting and telling the Gita to Arjun. Imagine, he's talking to Arjun and he still knows what every soul in the whole universe is thinking at that very moment. And he's keeping track of it. And he's still omnipresent in the whole universe. He's upholding the existence of the whole universe, even though he's seen sitting at one place in this universe on the chariot. Let's go back a little further. When Shri Krishna became a little baby, and then Vasudev Ji took him over to the house of Nanda Baba and Yashoda, and he grew up doing all of his childhood leelas, he was learning to walk, learning to talk, crying when he's hungry, getting a bath by his mother. So can you imagine little Krishna holding on to his mother's finger so that he doesn't fall, trying to take little baby steps, stumbling and stuttering? That little baby Shri Krishna is residing in everybody's heart, keeping track of all of their thoughts. He's upholding the existence of the entire universe. He's descending on other earth planets simultaneously in the universe. He's doing all of that. That's all of that is included in this one verse that I'm explaining to you. So how does he do it? He says, Prakritim Swamadhishthaya. Prakritim means his maya, this maya shakti, the material energy. Swamadhishthaya. I'm still keeping it under my control because it's my shakti. But sambhavam myatma mayaya. Sambhavami means I make myself appear in the world, take avatar. Sambhavam myatma. Myself, my divine body, I make it visible in the world. Mayaya. Through my maya. This means there are two mayas. There is one maya that Shri Krishna is keeping under his control, and one maya with which he's appearing in this world and doing all of these amazing things. So one maya is a lifeless energy. That's the maya that produces this universe. Maya has no mind of its own. Maya is not a living energy. It's just a lifeless energy, like electricity is a lifeless energy. But with Shri Krishna's power that he gives to maya, maya is able to expand into the form of the universe, and maya keeps running and functioning. But maya has no mind of its own and no life. It's a jada shakti. The other maya is Shri Krishna's yoga maya shakti. That yoga maya is a divine power. So that, you can say, is Shri Krishna. It's his personal power. Through yoga maya shakti, God can do anything. For instance, doing little childhood leelas and simultaneously keeping track of all the karmas of uncountable souls in this whole universe. How does he do that? Through yoga maya. How does he appear at one place on this earth and still remain omnipresent and also in his divine abode all simultaneously? Through yoga maya. How does he exist in all of his forms simultaneously and in each form omnipresently? Through his yoga maya shakti. So everything he does is through yoga maya. This is what he explains in this one small verse of the Gita. Then he tells, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharat abhyutthanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So he's telling Arjuna that I keep coming yuge yuge, through the yugas, I come again and again on each earth planet. Because each earth planet has its own, the same cycles of time, but we're not all synchronized. It's all happening according to that earth planet. So Shri Krishna says, I come and I have a reason to come. He has no personal reason. He has no personal desire or anything he's trying to gain for himself by coming on this earth planet. So one reason he gives, he says, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam. I come to protect the saints and kill the demons. So if we really think about that, could that be the only reason that he comes on the earth planet? Protecting the saints, he does automatically. He resides in the heart of every soul, and his saints are fully surrendered to him all the time, like Bhakt Prahlad. How many times did he protect Bhakt Prahlad? Finally, in one instance, he actually appeared as Narsingh Bhagwan to kill Hiranyakashyap, but even before that he protected him so many times. So he doesn't have to actually appear, doesn't have to actually take avatar to protect his devotee, nor does he have to take avatar to kill any demon. Did he have to take avatar in Ayodhya, grow up, learn how to shoot bow and arrow, go to the forest, then look for Sita, go all the way to Lanka, raising that army to help him, then go and fight Ravan? Did he have to do all of that to kill one demon? He destroys the whole universe just with a thought, and the whole universe is destroyed. He has that much power. So he doesn't need to do any of that to kill a demon. He's Satya Sankalp. He just thinks and the demon will have a heart attack. So he doesn't need to come on the earth planet in order to kill a demon or to protect any saint. So the next thing he says, dharma sansthapanarthaya. I come to establish dharma. Dharma is of two kinds, aparadharma and paradharma. Aparadharma means all the do's and don'ts of how to be a good person. How should you behave in the world? And paradharma means bhakti, how to love God and how to attain God. So he comes to establish both kinds of dharma. One kind of dharma he establishes by setting an example. Yadyada charati shreshthas tattadare tade janah sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. He said in the third chapter of the Gita, when he was telling Arjuna that even though I have no need to do anything, yet I still come in this world and perform actions. Why? To set an example for the common people. Which is why he was also telling Arjuna, this is why you have to do karma yoga. I'm not letting you leave this scene on the battlefield and go to the jungle. I want you to become an example of a karma yogi, someone who faced this situation, did his duty, yet kept his mind in God. So you are going to be an example. I also set an example. I have no need to perform any actions, but I perform the actions because people will imitate the actions of great people. But that doesn't mean that all of Krishna's actions are to be imitated. when he steals butter, he's not setting an example that is to be imitated. Certain examples that Krishna did were meant to be imitated. Like when he was living in Dwarika, at that time he was much more formal and he was setting the example of a perfect family man. How he did his duty to his queens, to his children, to the citizens of Dwarika, giving charity, the perfect ruler, you could say, the perfect father, perfect king, everything. So he was setting those examples there. He was setting the example of aparadharma. What are the do's and don'ts? And how can we actually emulate Krishna in those actions? But paradharma is different. It's not about imitating God's actions. It's simply about loving God. So if you want to imitate Krishna giving charity, that's good. You're becoming a good person. But doing good actions and loving God are two different things. Loving God means you really have to feel that He's your own. So it bypasses the whole worldly field. Then it's just your loving connection with Shri Krishna. So how are you going to make that connection? The easiest way is through the leelas. Those loving, naughty, charming, playful leelas Krishna did when he was in Braj. So why did he steal butter? There were many reasons. One was that the gopis were his devotees and they had that desire that Krishna, because of my family situation, I can't go out and meet you. So it would be really nice if you broke into my house and stole this butter that I'm making. That would make me feel so happy. So Krishna had to do it. He had to fulfill the desire of his devotees. He is bhaktavatsal. Bhakta Vashya, he is paradheen to his devotees. And he wanted to reveal some loving leelas that we, ordinary souls, could think about and love. That, God does such charming, playful, naughty leelas? Yes. He's not only serious, he's also playful. What are you more likely to meditate on? Krishna getting up in the morning, having his bath, doing some puja, giving some charity to the residents of Ayodhya, consulting with his ministers, giving some rulings. Are you more likely to meditate on that, or are you more likely to meditate on Shri Krishna crying because he's hungry? Or crying to get into his mother's lap? Or entering some gopi's house secretly and going and taking that butter, and then when he hears a noise looking around because he doesn't want to get caught? That kind of leela grabs your attention. You want to hear more. What happened then? So that means Krishna is entering your heart when you listen to such a leela. When we think about the leelas, I'm using the term loosely, the leelas of ordinary people in this world, because we do the same thing. Oh, my child did this. You all have conversations. Oh, today my child was doing this when they're growing up. You find a lot of joy in all the things that your children do as they grow up. And as parents, you get together and you talk about it. So what are you doing? Leela charcha of your own kids. But through that, you're developing worldly attachment. If you do the same chintan and charcha of Shri Krishna's childhood leelas, you're purifying your heart and you're releasing the worldly attachments. You're doing bhakti and you're going to attain Shri Krishna just by meditating on his leelas. So that's why he does all those loving, charming, playful leelas, to attract our heart and give us some attractive devotional material that we can meditate on in order to purify our heart. It makes doing bhakti very easy. All we have to do is think about the leelas. Yatha yathatma parimrijyate sau mat punya gatha shravana bhidhanai. Shri Krishna says, just by listening to my leelas, by hearing them, by thinking about it repeatedly, by chanting it, tatha tatha pasyati vastu sukshmam chakshuryathaivanjana samprayuktam. It clears up your vision. In other words, you can't see Krishna right now because we have a problem with our vision. Think of it like we have a blindness, a material blindness. So what medicine should we use to clear up our vision so that we can see Shri Krishna? The medicine of His leelas. But you don't have to put it on your eyes. Bring it in your heart. And keep doing chintan of it. Gradually your eyesight clears up. That's what he says. Chakshuryatha. Just like putting medicine on, if you have a temporary blindness and you put some medicine on your eyes, you gradually regain your eyesight. In the same way, you gradually gain divine eyesight so that you actually experience Krishna's presence next to you, close to you, until the moment when your heart is fully purified and then that final veil of Maya is lifted and Krishna is standing right there in front of you. All of this is possible through bhakti, simply by remembering Shri Krishna's leelas, His form, His virtues, and chanting His name, virtues, and leelas. So this is the dharma He comes to establish, both kinds. How to love Him, in other words, how to do bhakti, and also some of His actions were meant to set an example, how to be a good person in the world. So he says, that is why I come. To grace the souls, not directly with his association, because we were not ready for that, but to leave behind those leelas, which are then recorded in scriptures like Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Mahabharata, and then using that devotional material, a soul can do bhakti and attain him. So we come to him through his leelas and through his name. So all of this he explained in just a few verses of the fourth chapter, telling about his avatar rahasya. Who is he really? How does he appear on this earth planet, and why does he come? There are a couple more quite important verses from this fourth chapter. One where he describes about himself and all the forms of God, and any form of God, all being one, and one where he talks about Guru, but we'll save that for tomorrow along with the other topics that we'll take up, which will be in the fifth chapter.